hubs, maximum 3, with switches, really no limit nowadays. I mean, I'm sure there is a point at which things will start to not work, but...
Isn't there a maximum network diameter?
That used to apply in the old days of hubs and bridges, when you were mixing hubs and bridges, but in a bridge-only environment, theoretically, you can just keep going.
Unless one of the switches runs out of enough memory to know which IPs are where.
Actually, if you overflow the FIB in a switch, or the MAC forwarding table, depending on the brand, all it'll start doing is it'll start broadcasting every packet out every interface. Yeah, and it'll start basically emulating a hub. but the network diameter limitations of hubs still won't apply.
Yeah.
You'll run into a problem with how many machines or how many network interfaces you attach before you run into a problem with how many switches you can string together.
Okay, basically, I have a one switch, like this switch.
Mm-hmm.
Line code, I have 100. Does that work?
I wouldn't recommend it, but it should theoretically work, yes.
100 all nested, or 100?
Yeah, nested.
Like one to the other, to the other, to the other.
Easy chain.
Yeah.
Tell us what the answer is.
Yeah.
When you get
how many
to 99?
Ports on the switch?
Five ports.
You got
them for a dollar each. Or?
because they want to save the wire or wiring.
Oh God!
Otherwise, I sent you place. Oh. Like the building is long from the hallway to one another. All 10 rooms.
Oh, I see. No.
There is a maximum limitation. You can only go 100 meters, about 300 feet, between switches. But you can go like switch 1, 100 meters of cable, switch 2, 100 meters of cable, switch 3, 100 meters of cable, switch 4, and on and on and on.
But I don't understand here. You said a switch and a hub. And switch is a one part direct.
Basically, hubs don't exist anymore.
Yeah, don't worry about hubs. Yeah, that's a switch. Yeah. Don't even listen to him about the hubs. The switches. You can't buy a hub.
Actually,
I've got one.
Yes, you can.
No one buys a hub.
You do now.
Yeah. Is that a new
hub? Yeah, you can buy new hubs. HP still makes one. Okay. Well, I got a question. When using cups as a print server and spooling very, very large jobs, is there any way to get cups to start printing it before your client has finished spooling it? Like, and by very large, I mean like hundreds of megabytes. So I really don't want to wait for the whole thing to spool. Because the client...
Where is it spooling? In the same device or spooling on a network server?
Client machine going through a CUPS server, which is remote, to a networked printer thereafter.
So the CUPS box is spooling it.
Yeah. Actually, local CUPS will do the same thing.
Yeah. I'm just figuring out where it's being spooled. Is it being spooled in both places?
Don't think so, but I'm not sure. Because the client application can only generate the data so fast, it's not a terribly powerful machine. And it's generating like literally a 2,000 page job.
How fast is your printer?
I'm
saying this because I don't think you're really going to gain a whole lot of throughput here if you
the
start
printer,
immediately as opposed to waiting.
The printer can print one page in about as much time as the client takes to spool one page,
okay.
Which is that why I'm looking for this solution. So, yeah. Well, yeah. If I had that option, I would.
You always could just make it direct by
doing a sim, not sim link, but basically on the actual CUP server, just linking the two however way you want, whether it's through sockets or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's an ugly hack.
Yeah, very.
Are you sure the printer even start printing before it got the end of job?
Most do.
Do they?
Yeah. It just gets one page, it should do it.
Yeah.
That printer might not hold that whole job.
Does it?
Yeah.
No, I can tweak it to send like PostScript resources per page as opposed to all of the start of the job or whatever. So, I mean, there still has to be like a buffer somewhere in between because the two aren't necessarily going to be permanently perfectly matched in speed. But, yeah, like at the moment, it's, you know, you hit print, wait about, 2 hours, and then the printer starts printing.
But it's remote, so how would they even know?
It's not that remote.
It's not that remote.
Exactly.
Your other answer is just to write shorter letters.
Technically. So the answer is, let us know how you work it out. Okay. Nobody done that one?
Well, unfortunately, it's a standard option with Windows.
I know. Well, that. So I'm thinking, like, Windows can do this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And print from page 1 to...
That's doable. It just means somebody has to sit there.
Are you using the raw option for cups? Because otherwise you're going through conversion filters anyway.
I think so.
Okay. That's one thing I would check to make sure.
I certainly
because,
can.
Yeah. If you don't have the raw option set, you're likely not to be able to get that to work because it's going to go through conversion filters and those are going to wait until the thing's complete before they do anything.
I do have one printer set up that I know for sure is set up as raw and it behaves the same way.
Okay.
It kind of makes sense that CUPS would want to do that at all though because if you have an extremely slow client like that, he's going to basically lock the printer up for everybody's use where a lot of little jobs could get printed in the amount of time it takes the client to create that. 2 hours.
True. Yeah,
that's why
point.
It's an option with Windows, because sometimes that does make sense to do that, and it's okay to lock up a printer for 2 hours while one client fixed it.
Yeah. So. I was kind of surprised when this is like the first thing that CUPS can't do that Windows can. Oh, well. Next.
Have you gotten in touch with the people who write CUPS?
Yeah, the people who write CUPS are now called Apple. So I'm not quite sure how the verb get in touch with works with the subject Apple.
Jobs at apple.com.
Yeah, right. Oh,
but get the source code, build it for us, and let us know how it comes out.
I'll get right on that.
What about, is there a way to only print half the job?
Well, it'd be doable.
Because that would be the exact same throughput, I would think.
It just means somebody has to sit there and wait for, and submit manually the multiple print jobs.
Or if you're generating a big output, couldn't you generate a whole bunch of page print jobs individually?
Haven't thought of a way to automate it yet. Because it's a human sitting there going, print. So.
Couldn't you just emulate that on the server itself? Like send the client, say, print, it goes to the server, then the server accepts it all, which will be as fast as the client can do it.
Which is not which really is the problem.
But you have it actually not running on the CUPS server. Right? Run on the CUPS server, but don't connect to the printer from that server right away. Then you can split it up into jobs and send it up.
That solves the back end of the problem. It doesn't solve my front end problem.
Well, your CUP server wouldn't connect to the printer until the client says it's completely done.
Right. Well, that's the default behavior right now.
Yeah.
Fully spool the job, then start printing it. I want, like, cut-through switching of my print job.
In the ideal world, you'd want it to take the print job and break it up into N print jobs where N is a page.
That's what I'm saying, is actually get the server to accept it and then split it and send it. but don't lock up the printer until it's already split.
Locking up the printer is perfectly fine in this scenario.
Yeah.
We just don't want the two-hour delay before the first page comes out.
Just make it server-side and put it through the printer. Mm-hmm.
Just for fun, look into one of those gadgets that allows you to do a paper page for libraries. And see if one of those little shims will do a page count thing and send it page by page by when it comes up. Because some of them will. And then just set the page cost to zero and it'll go direct. Because I know that when I was using a box like that, it was Windows fed. And that's always the way it behaved. Because, you know, obviously when I was doing testing, I just set the price to zero because I didn't want to keep putting coins in. And as soon as I sent pages, it started printing page by page by page by. But you could see the pages coming up. Hmm. But it basically was page aware and sent each page job.
Because in theory...
Well, if the page price is non-zero, yeah. It's like it spools up the whole job and says, pay me, and it just keeps paying. And if you pay and it keeps spitting out pages, you run out of money in your smart card, it just stops there. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So it might be smart enough to paginate the job.
Hmm. So in theory, actually using a non-raw Q-type might give me better results, or at least give me more options. Because if I force Cups to re-rasterize the job as it comes in... Mm-hmm. Cups does fire up GhostScript and starts the rasterization right away. I know it does that. I know it does that because I've run out of memory.
another reason you want to do it page by page by. You think you get it to do it that way.
Yeah, no, just I remember once I ran out of memory because I had too many clients all submitting jobs at once. Mm-hmm. And like, poof, there's 50 copies of GhostScript.
Is there a time value in Cups? Is this to say, hey, this job's ended? So if you make it really short, because if it's taking that long to generate the pages, I imagine it's 10 seconds.
Yeah, it might break in the middle. Might break in the wrong place.
Once this page aware, it will actually start scanning the pages. Yeah. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Okay. That's an interesting idea.
PostScript printer from a Windows machine already.
It's actually not a Windows client.
Oh.
But yes, but it is.
Are you sending a PostScript? Well, then that's already page oriented.
Or I can make it page oriented easily enough. Yeah.
I mean, PostScript is page-oriented by nature. Mm-hmm. So it's already paginated.
Aren't there still some job-related things that have to be sent first?
Depends on the printer driver. Like, you can do stuff like send all your fonts at the beginning of the job. Uh-huh. So if you cut off the job in midstream, the next job won't have those fonts.
Only if it has a reset before it sends the next page. Or someone cuts into your job in between the
Somebody
pages.
Else gets a job in the middle.
Does this printer have to be under control of Cups when it's not in use by this client?
Prefer it to be, but we might wind up not.
Well, I just wondered, does anybody else use this printer except this one client?
Not for 2 hours, no.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's fine. Like, but, you know, if we're running it after hours or start at the end of the day, you know, like, who cares?
Because I just wondered if there's any other alternatives besides Cups to do this.
Well, yeah, the alternative is basically to use netcat as the print command on the client. And that does more or less solve the problem.
Kind of printer?
Phaser.
So you just can't LPR direct to it off the other machine? Skip Cups altogether? Skip the intermediate Cups?
For completely unrelated reasons, we don't want to run Cups on that machine. Mm-hmm. It's already slow enough. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, actually.
Just busy generating print.
You don't want to run Cups on which? On the client?
On the client, yeah.
Okay.
It's working hard.
You can just point it to the Cups server.
And well, that's what we're doing right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's just got the stub installed Cups. Yeah. Which I guess technically is the full Cups daemon, but it sort of does a Cups.
You don't need to run the Cups daemon in that case. Sorry. It's basically the client library will
contact.
It's all
installed, is what I meant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm.
Sorry, no magic bullets here.
Hmm. Although, actually, something you just said was if the printer's got a TCP socket open directly to it, I don't have to shut the queue down in Cups. cups will just report that it's temporarily offline.
It'll just retry.
A lot of printers will do their own management with that sort of thing.
I never even thought to try that.
Go straight to the
printer. And buy that.
Netcat.
That's why I said we tested that. It just never occurred to me that I could be using Netcat and leave the printer defined in cups and not actually have to do anything. I don't know why that never occurred to me. Okay. Something to test. Next.
We have the chance to time out in cups. We have a lot of people doing IPP straight printers that are managed like that. And the jobs that are queued, we prefer that they don't print directly to the printers because you don't get any real prioritization. You have no control. You have no, auditing how it's getting printed or anything like that.
Yeah.
But the stuff on queues doesn't quit printing. The printer's just busy and it sits around the queue until it's not busy anymore.
Okay, well, there's something to try.
So
anyway.
Netcat might work.
Just bought a MacBook Pro. I haven't used a Mac for years. I guess my question is, do I need to run an antivirus program with it, and if so, which one?
Yes, and find out whatever's a decent brand that's on sale this week. sometimes Norton will be on sale, or McAfee, or get one of them.
They have versions they'll run on MacBook.
Yeah.
Although I've run my MacBook Pro for a year and a half, I've just been lucky. Not that many people write viruses for Mac.
That's changing. University environment.
The trouble is.
Oh,
the trouble is the viruses are no longer OS dependent. They're all app dependent now.
Yeah.
So like Adobe's got bugs, and Firefox has got bugs, and Safari's got bugs, and it's no longer the OS. You can't just say I'm running Linux, I'm safe. As soon as you open up an Adobe Reader or a Flash Player, you're hanging your butt out the window. So.
Okay. Thanks. Speaking of the flash thing, I don't know if everyone had heard about the Google business, that Google's no longer providing Windows desktops to their staff. Everybody hear about that?
What's the deal?
I heard about that.
You can buy, if you're buying a new computer, you can put on, Mac OS X, you can put on Linux.
Yeah.
You just can't put on Windows without special exemption from, I think it's the CTO's office.
CIO.
CIO's office? Okay.
CTO or CIO.
Is this because they're having a spat or?
Security.
Yeah, they sort of said it was security.
Officially.
Because the vulnerability that the Chinese hacking thing was like a flash bug in IE8 on Windows. So it was sort of Windows-ish. But they're saying too that Chrome OS they're wanting people to run Chrome OS internally now, so they're saying, oh, now we're an OS company, you can't...
Your own dog food. Yeah. Well, they did say that employees have the choice of what OS they want to run, and they still do if they want to run Mac or Linux. They just can't keep Windows.
It's still a choice.
Right,
You have a choice as long as it's this.
as long as it's black.
Exactly.
As long as it's not black in this case.
Not blue, you mean?
Yeah. Windows covers.
Has anybody played with GNU Herd? I know it's in Debian repositories, but has anybody played with it recently?
No.
Okay.
Has it gone anywhere recently?
Yeah, they released a couple days ago, and in I think it's September they released. When it's actually stable.
Okay.
And they're using Linux kernel drivers, so anything that works in Linux, you can make work in the Herd without a problem.
My brain just exploded.
What is that? What is
it? It's out of the GNU system, but it's a kernel, just sort of like Linux, but used in Objective-C as opposed to Surface-C.
But most importantly, that kernel is not controlled by the Minister of Law. It's the GNU's kernel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to get into really complete politics, you've got the GNU.
Well, well, their objective was always to produce a complete system, top to bottom. So,
Oh, they've been working on Vert for decades.
Yeah, they have.
Approximately 20 years, yes.
Yeah. The last official release was like
20 years on the line.
But now you can actually just, like, with like three commands, just install like the Vert kernel to Debian if you have the right source.
I remember like the Debian Vert distributions being around about 10 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't compatible with Debian anything else, but it was...
It's a Debian project. They just used it.
It was just its own thing that wasn't stable that you could download and install if you wanted.
Wow. That's scary. That's it.
I have a question. We're looking at work to monitor temperature and humidity in various rooms, server rooms, labs, and things like that. And we're looking for a solution that's reasonably inexpensive and reasonably plug and play. I was just wondering if anyone had any experience with anything, preferably something that we can just plug on the network and monitor via SNMP.
About a year ago, actually, I saw some devices that were advertised, just that plug in that provides both those monitors, temperature and humidity. It was like $190 at the time, too.
APC
was pretty expensive.
APC was expensive.
Oh, yeah, NetBots, yeah.
They work.
I did come across one company, itwatchdogs.com, that has something called the MicroGoose, which is about $200. I was just wondering if anyone had alternatives or experience, good or bad, with anything they had tried.
We run something in our server room, and I can't remember what it's called. I didn't set it up. It's okay. It's had some problems where it sort of sends a spurious message that means nothing, but for the most part, it's okay. It's workable.
I'm going to spend $200.
You don't know what the brand is, though?
I'll have to check.
Actually, I'll second his recommendation. If you're going to spend that kind of money, just buy APC NetBots.
That's any they're expensive, though.
Shouldn't be much more.
Pardon me?
Phone some of the museum. Huh? Because they're the big users for temperature gaining control.
Previous about that.
No.
See, so the
if you want to
that cost should be about $250.
Okay. You can roll your own.
Oh, actually, we're just plugging in APC smart apps.
That's true. Roll your own one wire.
It's something called one wire.
Yeah, well. Cheap, I guess.
Really
but
cheap.
Yeah, we'd like to monitor humidity too.
I'm sure you can get something that monitors humidity.
Yep.
Does Maxim has those? There's data loggers too. If you just look up data loggers,
just a hygrometer and the webcam.
Well,
with a WRT.
That had actually been suggested, but I want something that I can monitor with SNMP.
Check the robotic stores too.
The robotic
sensors and all kinds of light and heat and everything else kind of sensors that they have running up. Yeah, on that car.
The humidity would be tough without a dedicated device.
Think USB interface for both. $20 for one wire. Mm-hmm. It drives it for a while. For days.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's not the sensor.
That's just the controller for the interface of the PC. And yet the sensor is like cheap.
For one wire, yeah.
Like $5.
Okay.
So just ask for a second.
How many do you need? Are we talking 100 here, or are we talking...
No, we're talking like 3 to 6 dozen.
Yeah, Steve Nichol did something like that in his house with a bunch of sensors and whatever. He might be a good guy to talk to. You don't think we
Steve?
Stephen Nichol?
Stephen Nichol.
He has a website that aggregates all the cell tower information.
Hmm.
map of Winnipeg, and you see everybody's cell tower and what frequencies they go up on. Cool.
What's this website?
Gosh, I don't know. What is it?
He's reaching for the pit thump machine. We'll have the answer in a minute. The only other place I can suggest is there's an outfit called Zonal that builds electronic controls for HVAC. They may have some kind of a system.
They're Zonal?
Zonal, yeah. They're out on Plymouth Road, I think, the last time I met them. They actually build the stuff here. And it's like it's a traditional temperature set thermostat and read back. But you can go in by the interface and read all the temperatures in all the rooms in the building. It's proprietary, but they were moving away from the proprietary and moving around to Ether. So if they've done that now, a few years ago, if they've done that now, then they have something that they have some sensors you could unload them from. Then you can go rewrite their code so it works. And symbiotic deal.
My brother also works for Conviron Environmental Systems. Hmm. They build environmental chambers for universities all across the world. And he says that they have sensors that do override heat. So they might have the sensors, just a matter of plugging into IP. I don't know if they'll sell them to you.
Okay.
You can call them. It's Conviron, and they're on Barrier.
Conviron?
Yeah, Conviron.
Forwardly controlled environments.
Yes.
Oh.
I can ask my brother. Maybe he'll be able to get you something on the back door.
All right. We can be a beta test site.
Yeah.
And learn a business.
Do you want that only monitoring or you want to control it?
Just monitor.
Sorry, monitor.
Just monitor.
Has to be client on the PC to view it.
Yeah, well, most likely I would just set up something with MRTG or something like that. Just to I want to be able to keep a history of it.
It's much faster to just fail a couple disks in the server and then your boss will pay for air conditioning.
That's a disturbingly true statement.
Well, believe it or not, that's kind of what started this. Now we have a solution in place, but we're looking to just monitor that because physical plant is doing weird things on weekends.
Is humidity critical?
Not as, but it's mostly temperature. But I want to monitor humidity, too, just to make sure. I'm not shutting down the AC, but I'm shutting down the supply fans in the building, which means the...
How many points do you need monitored, and how many grad students do you have? A bunch of old keyboards.
Email me when you're hot.
There's problems with settings or everybody's got optimizing the I totally lost it here.
Okay.
Each grad student would have a different set point.
So you have to calibrate them.
Yeah, that's it.
Put them all in zero water.
This is going downhill fast.
Are there any other questions?
Serious questions.
Yes.
Has anybody tried Haiku?
Yep.
Yeah? Did you know, what's it called? EOS?
EOS,
is it following the paradigm?
It's basically the file system. It's the underlying system. And everything else is based off of it.
Yeah, well, I'll be checking it out a little bit because it has quite a different kind of user interface. And I've never found a user interface I truly like. So I keep casting about looking for different user interfaces.
I used EOS extensively back in the day when it was still Notion.
Did you miss it when it was gone?
In some ways, yeah. It did some things very well.
Because they just released their R2 alpha. I tried out the R1, and there's, of course, a few bits and pieces missing that before I could make it my common workplace to really... I'd have to work with it for some months to decide if it's superior for me, but I think it's coming along. So.
Yeah, one of the former VOS developers, sort of a little later on, made the comment about Haiku that VOS back in the day was trying to step ahead and do things that had never been done before, you know, trying to do the system of the future, where Haiku was trying to recreate the system of the past.
if they're building the infrastructure that VOS had, then they can move forward into new territory again, okay?
Yeah, I know some...
I'm hoping.
Yeah. There were some... In some of the projects, like Haiku, and there were a couple of others, most of which have fallen by the wayside, it was a little too much, though, you know, trying to recreate lightning in the bottle rather than trying to do something new.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have some very nice technology.
Yeah. Well, I tried out Enlightenment, but the developers seemed rather surly, and I'm not sure it's actually ever going to get anywhere. It's a pretty cool interface, but it's not going to be around for anyone, but I don't want to spend all the time to learn it and have it not going there.
If it's still kicking around, and I'm not sure if it is, find a copy of PC Native Oberon. It was a very unique and different interface that was quite interesting. It blended command line and GUI in a way that I've never seen it.
That could be cool.
Really seamlessly blended the two together. It's quite impressive. Was developed in part by Nicolaus Beard.
I guess what I'm looking for most in a GUI is I'm a keyboard person, and so many nice GUIs had accessibility and they had keystrokes, and it seems like that's just fallen by the wayside. They don't enforce it, so applications have to provide it, and you end up reaching for the rodent constantly. Mm-hmm. It just drives me bonkers. It really screws up my workflow.
Mm-hmm.
So I end up staying on the command line a lot more than I should because I'm losing some of the value of the GUI.
Fluxbox BI bindings. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Because you can get OpenBox supports different bindings by itself. So I just use Fluxbox with OpenBox as a back end to my dimension.
Okay. Yeah, I tried out OpenBox for a while, but I didn't put Fluxbox over there. I was just screwing around with some of the. Some of the API they will come back somehow.
With VI binding, it's really nice.
So, I guess it's time. So, if that's no more questions, we'll move on.
It's yours. It's up to you.
I got one, it's sort of off topic kind of thing, more of a survey than a question. My good old clown pilot is dead forever. He's a kind of a PDA, so I'm trying to figure out which way to go with the smartphones. So how many people are BlackBerry people here, and how many iPhoners, and how many Android guys? Who's the BlackBerry guy?
I got a BlackBerry.
That's one.
Don't get one.
I had a Palm before this, a Trio.
A Trio, yeah.
And the organizer on the BlackBerry sucks.
Is it?
Oh, God, yeah. No, I agree. And the BlackBerry's organizer is perfectly capable, but yeah, compared to a Palm.
If you're used to a Palm, you'll never replace it.
No.
Yeah, my own Palm Pilot gave me everything I wanted, right?
No.
PDA.
What model did you have?
The old one? Palm's X3 or something like that. I don't know. It's like 10 years old.
XE?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a spare one, I
think. I got spares too, and they keep breaking on them.
You've basically got three options.
I think it's time to go for a smartphone.
Well, yeah, you have to go for a smartphone. There is no other option. But, well, okay, I was not even counting the iPod. So, yes, okay, the iPod's an option, and in many ways it does resemble the old Palm. I would... you've got a cell phone right now.
Yeah.
Who's your carrier?
Rogers. GSM.
Probably the closest you're going to get is an Android phone in terms of modern devices.
An HTC or something like that?
If you want a smooth user experience, buy the Sony Xperia. If you want something that actually looks like every other Android phone on the market and doesn't look like Sony's proprietary creation that God knows how much of the Android software won't work on it.
Really?
Well, anybody here used a lot of Sony equipment in the last decade or so? I hear some chuckles. That means yes. Sony likes to do the embrace and extend thing. And embrace, extend, and break backwards compatibility with everything else. But Rogers also sells an Android phone from Acer, which is basically stock Google Android plus one application. And I would say it probably won't be very long before you see a Palm OS emulator for Android.
There was a really kick-ass RPM calculator.
Do not buy a BlackBerry if you like RPN. There are no RPN calculators available for the BlackBerry except for one extremely crappy implementation of an 11C.
Now this thing was programmable, and you could sort of write little note things in it, and it was just, it was like fourth, you know? It was great.
If I know I need a calculator, I don't haul out my BlackBerry, I haul out my HP.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's that painful to use.
There's HP emulators that run on...
not on BlackBerries.
On Androids.
Yes. Yeah. There already are for Android. Yeah. And iPhone, yeah.
How many Android guys have we got here? Anybody?
Probably no one, yeah.
I switched from a Palm to an iPod Touch. I was very happy with
that. Okay.
Is it like their iPhone?
Oh, yeah.
As an organizer, or...
As an everything?
Yeah.
I had a BlackBerry before, and I switched up to the iPhone, and I wouldn't go back. Better display of what I need.
I actually paid $10 for an organizer app on the iPhone, and I love it.
And there are constraints, obviously.
It's just called to-do by app.
Syncing.
Yeah, which wasn't complete.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.